Welcome to the Thriving Farmer Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Kilpatrick. Our mission is to inspire, educate, and celebrate sustainable farming. We believe that you can build a profitable, sustainable farm that gives you true farm freedom. Join us as we talk to farmers, innovators, educators, and entrepreneurs to glean their top takeaways in business and life. Hey, Thriving Farmers, Michael Kilpatrick here. Today, Carrie Klebanowski joins us on the podcast. She is a 44-year-old reformed suburbanite who moved with her family to their 10-acre farm in Alex, Oklahoma in February of 2015. In previous lives, she owned an on-location portrait business and worked in special education. Initially set up as a homestead, her family dabbled in pastured pork and poultry before diving in full gusto into market gardening in 2018. Since then, she's made it her goal to grow the best quality, most nutrient-dense vegetables possible. And in that effort, the Looney Farm became the first certified certified naturally grown farm in the OKC Metro in early 2019. Carrie and her husband Joe look forward to working together full-time soon and find even more avenues to serve the OKC metropolitan communities through the farm. The Looney Farm currently sells at the two OKC farmers markets, a buyer's club style CSA, and through locally sourced grocery store. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So give us a little bit of an overview. I know your farm has been changing rapidly, lots of things going on. So kind of tell us what the current state is.
Yeah. So the wonderful COVID situation kind of upheaved everything, including our farm. So currently we are doing about 50% of sales through our online store that includes both our online buyers club and then also just to general public online sales. And then just this last week, we started our second market stall at a newer farmer's market that's opened up in the Oklahoma City downtown area. So we have two market stalls that we do every Saturday. And then we have pickups for those. Those are two of the pickup locations for our online sales. And then after markets, we kind of divide and conquer deliveries to home addresses in the metro as well.
Oh, wow. So Saturday is the big day then.
Saturday is a day. Yes, it is.
Yes. Yes, very cool. So let's talk about the setup. How much farm land are you farming?
So we own 10 acres for the property, but we're currently only have about half an acre under cultivation. We're adding a new high tunnel to that. So that'll just put us just over half an acre, I think. But we're really not even using the full capability. I think I've got about three more beds before I even have all half acre planted. We've talked about expanding that to an acre over the next season or two. So we're kind of still working on that process as well.
Yeah. And what kind of crops do you focus on that acre, half acre?
We are primarily doing a lot of greens. The lettuce mix is what we're known for. A lot of baby root vegetables. And then we just kind of toss in some of the seasonal things. Like we do the courgettes or the baby squash in the summer, some winter squash if we can. And then some of the salad tomatoes, and peppers and snack things like that that we can toss in for added things to our salad mixes.
Exactly. So talk to us about your background. You know, why did you want to be a farmer?
Yeah, we moved out here initially, like you said, to be a homestead. We saw Food Inc. back in, I think, 2010, something like that, and just really wanted to have more control over our own food sources for our family. And then it just really kind of grew. Joe and I both have an entrepreneurial spirit. We like people, generally speaking, and wanted to be able to serve our community in some way. That's a big part of our work here is that mission is to be able to get better food into our communities. And it just kind of gravitated towards the garden after being introduced to Jay and Fortier. We had some issues with animals. The laws in Oklahoma aren't necessarily the most friendly when it comes to small farm meat production. And and Joe's not a big animal. It's just not his thing. So the vegetable aspect was really intriguing to us. And it's been great. It's been amazing the welcome we've received from that.
So talk to us about the animal side. So when you were doing that, were you using a lot more of the land? And were you just, the processing, I'm assuming, was the legal part that was having challenges?
Processing was legal. No, we actually weren't. We were only using about the we call it the front 5 acres. And it was fairly small. I mean, I probably did about 200 chickens, maybe a couple dozen turkeys and a handful of pork. It was one of those deals where we kind of realized when we wanted to take it into a business avenue versus just a homestead that we didn't have the setup land-wise to really uh-huh. expand the animals. We have half of our property is wooded. Mm-hmm. And so just financially, it just didn't make sense. We didn't have the land base to be able to make it a viable business per se.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, the processing was a big part. You can only do 1,000 birds on farm to sell to the general public, and you can't sell to, you know, restaurants or retailers or things like that without having it being certified. So
yeah, 10 acres just doesn't really give you enough
land base.
For animal production. Yeah. So let's talk about, you know, on the farm now, what does the typical day look like?
So the typical day, so it's already getting hot here. So right now I'm starting to get up a little bit earlier than I like. I'm not a morning person by nature. I have to really push myself. So my crew actually got here this morning at 7. So I usually try to get up and have some coffee, kind of look over the crop plan, take a walk through the fields and kind of plan out what the goal for the day is.
Uh-huh.
We have a team meeting when they all get here. And kind of just go over what the priorities for the day are and kind of assign different tasks. We have a lunch together. They're all great. I've told them they don't have to eat with me, but they choose to, which is kind of fun.
Uh-huh.
And then we just kind of work throughout the day. They leave here between 4 and 5, depending on what time they get in. And then I'm trying really, really strongly to be done at that point. Now,
uh-huh.
you know, in Oklahoma heat, sometimes things like insect management has to be done later in the evening just with the temperatures. So I will go out and do that a couple days a week, fertility type stuff. But for the most part, I'm done by 5 and inside with the family for the evening. So
what does done mean? Does that mean no more book work? Does that mean,
no. Okay. Yeah, no, I wish. That means out physically in the fields,
yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. I mean, I'm really, really fortunate. And I will say I will toot my husband's horn all day long. I'm the grower. He doesn't do much of the actual labor in regards to farm work, but he is the only reason that we are doing what we are doing right now, because he has got enough of a tech background.
Uh-huh.
He's very intentional about making sure things are done right and done well, and managing the finances and the books and all of the market displays and the paperwork, just all of the back end business side of things, Joe handles and is what keeps it going. So there's a lot of discussions that happen on the couch with the laptop,
mm-hmm.
kind of going over those kinds of things, making sure that the online store is where it needs to be and everything's being communicated and yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah. What are some strategies that you've used to handle the heat? Because I know it does get tremendously hot out there.
It does. We have caterpillar tunnels. We're probably going to be adding shade cloth on top of some of those here soon.
Mm-hmm.
We do use the shade cloth over the greens when we transplant them. Starting this week, we started that because we're hitting 96, I think, today is the forecast.
Wow.
It was 90 yesterday. I know. It's fast and furious. Last week, we had 70s or 80s or something, and now here we are. A lot of that. We also did the overhead misting in the tunnels, the caterpillar tunnels, just mm-hmm. to be able to get those greens and really even just the root vegetable leaves, just everything get cooled off. So we run that. I think I have it set 4 cycles and
uh-huh.
it runs just for 10 minutes or so a cycle on a lot of the greens. Taking lots of breaks. I've told the team, you know, they're young, so
uh-huh.
they try to push themselves and I'm like, guys, it's not worth it to get sick. I have no problem with you sitting down for 10 minutes every hour if you need to. If it's 95 degrees and 80%
yeah.
humidity, you need a break. You don't
yeah.
need to be pushing yourself out there. So
that's just nasty weather.
It's nasty weather. It's Oklahoma. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about task management, because I know that's something that so many strong farmers struggle with, and especially like when you're starting out your farm, I feel like at that point you a lot of the times don't know what's important. So how have you made that kind of priority list and the focus list for the people that are working with you?
Yeah. So in all honesty, it's been a little chaotic. I used Tend,
okay.
the software.
Yep.
I do like it. I'm still finding out how to use it to its full capabilities. We went in full gusto at the beginning of the year, and then we had some medical issues with one of our kids and that kind of sideswiped things, and then COVID. And so everything
uh-huh.
has gotten turned around, but I do find that it's really helping me with the team. I'm a big user of Keep. And even paper lists. I'm very tactile, so I like to write. And then even Joe makes fun of me because I'll write it down on paper and then type it into to tend or to keep, to be able to have. So I think that's kind of, you know, it's to the point now we're playing a lot of catch up, trying to get things in the field. And it's kind of just my priority list right now is just get the beds all planted. Mm-hmm. And then we have a setup where, like, today is Thursday. Our goal is to have everything harvested and ready for market by today at 5, mm-hmm. so that Fridays aren't crazy. Fridays is when we close our online orders and we can package those up at noon or 1 o'clock and then spend Friday afternoon working in the field, getting beds flipped over or ready to flip over, and kind of getting set up for the next week with new seed trays and things like that.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So you want to be done harvesting and packing by 1 o'clock. So then you have a few hours left to be able to actually prep for the next week.
Right. So we actually want to be done harvesting and having everything packed by 5 o'clock on Thursday.
Okay. Yeah.
And then our online market closes at noon. And so we usually take lunch at noon. And then so 1 o'clock, Joe's got all the orders printed off. We've got the pick sheet for the online orders printed off. And then we go in there and kind of pull all those online orders, get them all into the different coolers that they need to go into. And then last week was the first week we actually had to add in. Now we have to figure out how we separate what's left for the different two markets. And that's still a process right now because we're still figuring out, you know, what the sales are going to look like. It was a great market for us. It actually did better than our primary market. So there's going to be some, I think, ebb and flow in that process for a couple weeks.
Yeah. And are both of them the exact same time frame?
The new one is an hour shorter. So they both start at the same time. It's an outdoor market though. The other one is an indoor market. Mm-hmm. So there's a little more setup involved. I have to go set up a tent with that one, but I think it ends an hour earlier. They're literally 5 minutes apart.
Oh, that's so nice.
It's very nice. So last week I got done, drove over, helped load up the other market. And then we kind of divvied up deliveries and things after that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That hustle on Saturday is all.
It's a hustle. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So what's the hardest thing you've ever done as a farmer?
I was thinking about that question. I think for me, honestly, the hardest thing I've done this year was we took 2 weeks off in, I think it was March or April, not too long ago, really. And it was one of those deals, again, it had to do with my daughter had a pretty significant medical issue that we found out about. And we spent a week in the hospital with her, just with the weather and the whole COVID and everything changing. We just knew, and we have the high tunnel coming in to put up. And so we just made that decision that we knew that the crop situation wasn't where it needed to be to support a market sales anyway, to make that justifiable. And so it was just, let's just step back for a couple weeks from everything and get the tunnel started and get the crops in the ground. And you know, I think the reason it was hard for me is because I'm a people pleaser.
Yeah,
I really want people to love our stuff, and we have great support. I'm not a single person complained. Like, we put out a letter to our buyers club members, our 50 members, and I mean, it was just all kinds of support across the board. So I think that's just a testament to, we have great open communication with our customers and our members. And we try to be honest with them and real, and I think they get it. We don't really have too many people that. You know, you'll get the customers at market that don't understand why you don't have watermelons in March.
Yeah.
But the customers that we have seem to be pretty well-versed on what's reasonable to expect.
So talk to us a little bit about that. You said communication is really key. What are some of the things that you've tried to communicate to your customers how have you done that?
We have a newsletter. So we actually have, you know, the standard clipboard that we have people sign up for at market. And then we also have the Buyers Club newsletter that we do. We don't over blast them things. I think it's important. I don't like getting a bunch of emails either. So we try to keep it as clear and concise as possible. I really try to, it's that balance of not like giving excuses, but just being honest and saying, you know, I mean, they live here. They understand when the weather, when you have a freeze in April, like that's probably not good for crops.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot of emailing. I'm big on social media, Instagram. We have a decent following there locally, and Facebook. And so I try to share the day-to-day stuff as much as I can on those kinds of things too, and the stories. So nothing's really a surprise to them. They were even, we kind of told them about our daughter without getting super specific.
Yeah.
Just like, they know this is a family farm. And so they have been really supportive of all that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you were starting your farm, you did significant investments, time, energy, money. Talk to us about the different kinds of investments you did and why you felt that was necessary.
Yeah. So when we were first introduced to market gardening, actually through another YouTuber and guy, Justin Rhodes, introduced us to JM Fortier in one of his videos I saw, I kind of recognized initially and upfront that there was going to need to be, number one, a very significant time investment, because yeah. I had some gardening experience, very little, and just dabbling. So I knew I needed to learn better about the growing techniques for succession growing. But I also recognized that if I was going to do this as a business, it needed to be a business first and a farm second. Like, uh-huh. It just is. And there's nuances to that. But I think you have to be willing, any other business you start, there's investments, upfront investments. So I invested in JM's masterclass. I invested in Small Farm University and Ray's masterclass for lettuces, because as great as JM's techniques and things are, Ray's in Tennessee, JM's in Canada.
Yeah.
So we learned really quickly that you can't necessarily follow his crop plan down here, which is fine. I tried for a short time to use his techniques and just kind of bootstrap it.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we're in our 40s and we're fairly fit, but it became very clear very quickly that we needed that infrastructure and those tools. And that's really where we probably made our biggest investment. We took out a small farm loan through the USDA FSA program, the beginning uh-huh. farm loan. And that's how we paid for all of our caterpillar tunnels and our BCS and a lot of the irrigation and things to get the walk-in cooler and wash and pack set up. So that was very important to us.
And speak a little bit to the process of that, because I know a lot of people are scared about, you know, even attempting one. So talk to us a little bit about how that works.
Yeah, I was very scared. I mean, I think waited 3 or 4 months. And in hindsight, it was probably the easiest loan process I've ever gone through, in all honesty. Uh-huh. It really wasn't difficult. And we didn't have to have, we had a basic business plan in place, but that wasn't required. They wanted to know that we had an understanding of the pricing for our products, our sales revenues that we were going to be able to do, and had a grasp of the understanding of how that was all going to come together. It was very low paperwork and low stress. And I think it took less than, I don't remember exactly, but it was less than 2 months from start to finish we closed. Yeah. I mean, and that will vary based on their workload and caseload that they have of people applying, but it's been very nice. The interest rate was something that, you know, you can't really compete with in the commercial market, and it's an annual payment instead of monthly. So that was nice. So it was a very easy process. I told people all the time, I'm more than willing to share the information we shared with them. We didn't have to have any kind of significant proof of experience. I mean, I think they wanted to know that I listed out some of the farms that we were mentoring with and things like that, but that was basically it.
Yeah. So talk to us, when is that like a revolving line of credit with them that you pay some off, you can take more back out, or is it?
No, it's just a standard. And I think it's a 7-year term for the equipment. They do have an operating loan. That was one part that we didn't understand going in, you know, that we knew that there was a cap of $50,000, but we didn't understand that they actually separate annual operating expenses into a separate loan. And that's a single 1-year loan. So we didn't end up taking that part of it. I didn't feel comfortable with having like an $8,000 loan payment plus the $6,800, whatever it is, for the annual equipment loan. So we just went with the equipment loan. It's a 7-year term. Yeah, it's not revolving. You can do more than one at a time. So we could go pursue that for an additional loan if we wanted to for some other
equipment. Interesting.
Yeah. So.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, because I know funding is something that so many farms ask about, and I think it's a lot easier than people think. You just have to make sure you dot the right I's
exactly.
And cross your T's. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who would you say your mentors have been? Because you've obviously took some online trainings, but you also have a support system locally that you've worked with.
I do. So I would obviously, I mean, J.M. Fortier, his book, you know, Curtis Stone with some videos. Ray has been amazing. He's not local, but he has been like his masterclass for lettuce growing in the South and just growing in the South. And he's just so availed himself over and above what I would have ever expected. But yeah, locally I have, there's another farm up north of us, Indigo Acres, that Kevin grows in the same manner. He's a couple years ahead of me. So he's been amazing to help just with, he's great at data keeping as well. So he's great. He's my numbers guy. If I can call back and say, hey, last year, how did this go? He's been amazing in helping us with our high tunnel. We actually bought the same high tunnel he did. So he's helped us with some of the headaches of assembling that puzzle. Yeah, there's a few other local farms that are great. It's interesting. I mean, there's some farms that are, I'd say I don't follow because I can see the difference in having systems and having these plans in place and the difference that can make in the success of a farm. So I think I've learned from that as well.
All right. So you're saying you see some farms out there that don't have systems that aren't set up well. And you're like, oh, let's keep me away from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, just, you know, you want to be supportive because it's agriculture and you want to support farms, but yeah, there's definitely things I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to try that. That's not going to so much work for me, I don't think.
If there was, say, like a magic reset button as it relates to starting your farm, what systems would you go back and put in place sooner?
I would have hired people much, much earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned really quickly that half an acre in one person is not possible. I mean, maybe it is if you're 25, 30 and, but for us, it was, I was killing myself.
Yeah. And you want to work 90 hours a week.
Yeah. Yeah. And not be able to get up. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So hiring people, let's talk through what prevented you from hiring people. Did you feel like you just couldn't afford them or?
I think it was that, and just also maybe not being, I think there's some self doubt that comes into play. I mean, like this is only our third season growing, so I'm not an expert. I'm still figuring a lot of stuff out myself. And so just that nervousness of being able, do I know enough to train other people? And I'm finding out that I do in fact know enough to help them learn some things too. But yeah, I think that and the cost, I think that's just, I think maybe even thinking that I could do more than I could do, not being fully aware of the physical toll and honest with myself in that. So.
With that, I'd like to stop here and take a quick break. In a minute, we'll be back with Carrie from the Looney Farm. If you've been enjoying this episode so far, you're going to want to head over to growingfarmers.com/free resources and download our free resource bundle to help you shave hours off your week and become a thriving farmer. It includes resources such as our 10 winter growing secrets we wish we knew when we started, which is a ebook which talks about the tips and techniques to get better growth in your winter production. We teach things like the simple but counterintuitive principle that trips up most beginning growers, the shape and size of tunnels that are best for winter production, how to prepare beds so they are weed-free and get beautiful lush stands of crops, what to do about pests like aphids, voles, and slugs, how to fast-track your research to fine-tune your production for your microclimate, and how to pack in more crops for higher yields and profits. So head over to growingfarmers.com/free resources and download your free resource bundle today. And we are back with Carrie. Carrie, right before we went to break, we talked a little bit about your team. Who all do you have working for you?
Okay, so I have people that I am not smart enough to be their boss, quite honestly. And I said that before, but I really, no. So we have 3 employees right now. We have a full-time employee, and then we have 2 part-time employees. Our full-time employee, all 3 of them are very young. They're 19 through 25. They're all students. So this is a seasonal thing. We weren't sure. We kind of went into it saying we're flexible in that. And one or two of them thought it was going to be a full year with the COVID situation. And now schools are kind of making their decisions. So our full-time employee is actually just finished up his freshman year at Cornell in the organic agriculture program there. And he was also the youngest master gardener in Texas state history. He got his master gardening certificate at 15. So he's Yeah, I mean, like, he's great. I'll call him over and be like, hey, come over and what do you think about this? So he's been amazing, but he didn't have field experience. He wanted to have something practical. He's done a lot of research in their tunnels and in their greenhouses, but he wanted to see the systems. He wants to do this at a later time in his life as well. I have one part-time person who is wrapping up her master's in the fall. So she'll probably be able to stay on a little bit longer than the other two. She's more local. My full-time employee moved up here from El Paso for the summer, actually. Which is kind of fun. Yeah. And then our third part-time person is just finished up her a double degree in biochemistry and biology. And in the fall is going out to Michigan State, I believe, to work on her PhD in soil science.
Wow.
I know.
So how do you find these people?
We put an ad on Indeed. Again, Joe is amazing. He worded it well, I guess. We were really surprised. I will be honest. When we first started the hiring process, I agreed to it because I still wasn't sold that I was ready. But I agreed to it because I didn't think anybody would apply. We're kind of out there.
Yeah. Yeah. You're out in the middle of nowhere.
We really are. And, you know, it's a good 45 minutes to 50 minutes, depending on where you are in the metro area from downtown Oklahoma City to us. But yeah, we had a crazy amount of applicants. Some not great, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just got some, when we saw these three in particular, it was just clear that this was the type of person that we wanted, someone who was interested in learning these systems and not just looking for a quote unquote job, but that they were really interested in market gardening and the community aspect. One of our employees is very interested in serving the community more and likes gardening. So that was something. But yeah, one of our girls is driving over an hour each 3 days a week to come work.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, that's a long
way. That's pretty crazy. Yeah.
So you get the three then, and then obviously Joe does work. He does more of the office, the admin, the books, and he's at the markets with you.
We've split up now. So now he and one of our teenagers at one market, and I'm at the other market with another teenager.
Okay. And then your kids, talk to us about their enrollment in the farm.
They're teenagers. So their enrollment is the extent of how much they want to participate. I'm very much, I want them involved. I want them to understand why we do this, and they do. But I'm also I don't want them to regret or look down on this time. I want them to be invested in it and understand and see it as a blessing and a good thing. So we pay them if they do any work for us. We do pay them the same rate we pay the other workers for the work they do. They help at market. My oldest daughter, Nijay, will actually do some deliveries with us as well. She was doing like one of the routes herself before we split up into the two markets. So they come to market with us now. The two girls do. My son has another job off the farm as well. So he's a little bit less involved, but he'll help when I ask him. If it's not too much.
All right. So that's the team. I think a lot of people don't realize how many people need to be involved in small agriculture, because we're talking three employees, you, your husband, then your kids.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. And I think, you know, we're still trying to figure out, we have it set up now where our full-time employee is here Monday through Friday. Then we have an overlap. We have one girl that's here 3 days a week, and then the other girl's here 2 days a week. So Monday through Friday, he's here. On Tuesday through Thursday, I have Tuesday through Thursday, one works and the other one works Wednesday and Thursday.
Gotcha.
So Wednesday and Thursday, I have all three people here. So again, those are our big harvest impact days. So for me, that's kind of that's when I need the most hands, because I can have somebody in the wash impact, I can have somebody harvesting, and I can even have, you know, a third person doing some bed prep if I need.
Absolutely. Very cool. Let's talk about marketing. Because I know that's something that you've done incredibly well. And I think that's something that so many people struggle with. Because I mean, a lot of people say like Oklahoma City, I mean, it's like not known particularly for its foodiness. I mean, like, give me New York City, give me LA, but you're selling into Oklahoma City and crushing it. Talk to us kind of how you built that brand. What are the kind of key things that you wanted to communicate when you were starting?
Yeah, so the branding is important. I think my photography background and just having that little small business for those years really played into that quite a bit. I think, you know, you put pretty pictures up and you keep in contact frequently. You can't have long spurts of of nothing, no contact. Yeah, social media has been huge for us. It's funny, like when we got into the first market, the market manager specifically said that one of the reasons we were there is because of our rabid fans had been begging him to let us go. And then he actually put us in the back of the market because he wanted us to draw people through the market instead of just going up to the front vendors. Which I was flattered by that. I mean, that was an awesome thing. I don't know the secret. I'll be honest. I'm still trying to figure it out, but I think it's just, again, some of being honest, showing the good and the bad, the real life. I mean, our farm is called the Looney Farm, not because of a name, but because that's just a really good description of our life, where we don't take ourselves too seriously. I mean, I take farming seriously. And I think that for us, I think there's, especially in this area, organics, you know, in this area of the country, I still get a lot of eye rolls from the local ag people. Like they don't necessarily think it's worth all the time and the money. But I think that what the connotation can come with that too, is that, you know, organic food is full of holes and is, you know, not necessarily pretty. It's the weird looking carrots and the beets with gross tops. And I decided that wasn't okay. I don't profess to have perfect vegetables because I don't want to waste vegetables just because they're not perfect, but my stuff's going to look good. And it's going to be presented in a way, that it's appealing for people to see. People shop with their eyes. It's just a, you know, proven marketing fact. You know, the stack it high, watch it fly. It's pretty funny. We had at the market last week, a lot of market vendors around here still just lay stuff out on their tables. That's just how they've done it for 20 years. And then we come in and just a few little crates and some boards and stack it up. And all of a sudden you have people stopping to take pictures of your, you know, they may not buy anything, which I wish they would, but they're taking pictures because it looks so nice.
And they're taking those pictures and they're probably sharing them with a friend or posting them on Instagram, tagging. So they're doing your marketing for you because you had a beautiful display.
Yeah. It's really funny. We actually, this new market, my husband's boss at his corporate job that he still works, sent me a message saying, hey, my cousin said, oh my gosh, I was at the market this week and there's this amazing new vendor and I had the most beautiful things. And my husband's boss is like, was it the Looney Farm by chance? Oh my gosh, really fortunate. So it is. I mean, they are talking about it and that's what you want, right? I mean, you want people talking about it for good reasons.
Yeah.
And so it really does help. I was showing the employees the other day, a lady that lives in the little town 15 minutes from us has some Facebook group and she did a post promoting my farm that was more detailed than any post I've ever done for my farm in my life. Like it listed the markets we were at with the addresses and the hours. It listed every single pickup location with the address and times, like the fees, everything. I was like, I can't pay somebody enough money to do that kind of advertising for me. So
you might have a new employee there.
Hey, you know what? She got an extra box of something last week in her order. So
So you talk about pretty pictures, you know, making the stands look good. You're selling direct to retail with everything except that one grocery. You get the maximum value for your products. And are you doing any other kinds of promotion?
I'm really not. We've done a few Facebook ads when we did our buyers club. But I really haven't had to. I mean, I think part of it is that balance for us of not wanting to, I want to make sure that I under promise and over deliver. And so we're still catching up, getting crops to the production level that we want them to. I'm sold out at the new market of most of my stuff with 2 hours left to go, which is a good thing, but I would have liked, there's a lot of people still there that came through and didn't get to see all the stuff that we have. So we want to increase our yield some on that. And we're definitely looking at some of those. We use Shopify, and I know there's a lot of correlation that I guess Joe said that you can do with Shopify and Facebook ads together. So that's something that he's looking at as well.
You guys have really tough soils to work with out in Oklahoma. So it just takes a couple years to get the soils up to production levels with, you know, getting the nutrients right and the organic matter and all of that. So
that and just, you know, being away, being not being here and being able to devote full time to the farm is just, and you're right, the soil, I mean, and the water. I mean, we had this year has been a little bit less crazy, but last year we had something like 24 inches of rain from April through the end of May, and then we didn't have a single drop of rain until August.
Wow.
So, yeah. I mean, it changes quick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really, really tough.
Yeah.
So let's talk about new farmers, because you're a couple of years in, so you've kind of gone through some of those beginning mistakes, and you've watched these new farmers now. Yes. What do you think the biggest mistake beginning farmers make?
I think it's twofold. I think they underestimate the amount of work that goes into it. I know I did. You know, you're a little naive, because it is a lot. And I think they underestimate that just because you have a plan doesn't mean that plan's gonna, like, there's something's gonna go wrong. You just have to kind of plan for that. But I was thinking about this question, and I think this is a tough one, because I bootstrapped it, and I think over bootstrapping. I think, again, it comes down to, if you're gonna do this as a business, be willing to make that investment in some good quality infrastructure and tools, because it will make a world of difference in that amount of time and effort that you have to put in, and can really drastically improve, I think, the quality of life that you have, but also increase and speed up that time period of being able to generate some great revenue.
So what was the big key piece of infrastructure that you invested in?
Caterpillar tunnels.
Okay.
Those are, like, seriously. I mean, protected ag. Anything in that umbrella, but really the Caterpillar tunnels for us. Last year we took those off in the summer because I was worried about the heat, and it was not conducive. There was just, the rains, we took them off before the rains. We lost tons of crops in that. So my Caterpillar tunnels was staying up, and that's already in the budget to pretty much cover every field I can, every bed that needs to be covered. It just makes so much difference in the ability that I have to protect it from the flooding rains, or to add, I can add the misters in there, and then I can control the irrigation and keep things cooled off. My team's out there harvesting beets that were in open bed, and the difference in the greens on those versus the ones that are growing in the Caterpillar tunnel are night and day. So yeah, that was a big one for us.
Let's talk about the mental game for those first few seasons. just share, like, the thoughts that went through your mind, and kind of what were the things that you did to kind of help you work through that?
Am I crazy for doing this? Was this something that went still goes through my head? Like, there's a mantra we always, in fact, we say, I think I said this yesterday multiple times, like, start a farm, they said, it's fun, they said.
Yeah.
That's something we, there's a lot of self-doubt. And I think it's part of the way I've combated those feelings of, it's frustrating. I mean, I think it's not an untrue statement to say that there's not another business I can think of where you can do everything you're supposed to do and have so much still go wrong, because there's so many factors that you can't control. So I think having a good support net, Small Farm University, that Facebook group, man, like, the local farmers here in our area, like, being able to have people who get it, and who you can commiserate with and lift you up and laugh about it, you know, try not to take things too seriously. That's been a huge thing for me. I think the mentors, people like JM and Ray, being honest about their struggles, that's encouraging to me. If I can see that somebody who is world renowned for their farming abilities can still lose a whole bed of something to, a disease or something, that encourages me that, okay, it's not just me. Like, this is not a newbie mistake. This happens even to the best of us sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at, like, Ray, and he's constantly changing and constantly incredibly transparent about that. Like, okay, we changed this system. We did this. We're doing this now. And then, like, 4 months later, actually we switched to this.
Yeah. So, and that's amazing because I think it's very easy. And I think that's one of the things, the differences I appreciate so much about being part of that community, is because I think in this area anyway, that's one of the places where I don't see the local farmers evolving. They get very stuck in their ways and stuck in how they do things, and aren't willing to admit that, hey, maybe this needs to be done differently, and open with that. There's a lot of protection of how they do things, and pride, I'm sure, comes with that. But definitely being that openness has been huge for us, just mm-hmm. being able to see that.
Mm-hmm. If you could pick one, what would be your favorite farming tool?
Can I say my husband? No, I'm just kidding. He's like, wait, no, the caterpillar tunnels. Okay. And I'll go back to that. I mean, it just is. It's just so, it's such a game changer for those.
Yeah.
Landscape fabric would be a close second.
Okay. Now, and the caterpillars, have you configured them any way special? Do you particularly like the Gothic or just the regular Quonset style?
So we have the Quonset style. I want to get the lifts mm-hmm. that they have for the side to raise them up. I think that would make things easier with the BCS on those side beds.
Yeah.
So that's probably the only difference. The Quonset, or I'm sorry, the Gothic, I do have a Gothic, our high tunnel is a Gothic, but it's cemented in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And with the winds that we get here, there's a farm south of us about an hour that lost their Gothic cat tunnel a couple weeks ago, a month ago or so, in some pretty significant winds. And they're right next to that was their Quonset, and it was fine. So yeah. that was pretty telling to me that I'm good sticking with those. I like the irrigation going down the center of those real well. So I think that's probably what we'll stick with. We've taken off the ends. We don't do the traditional ends. We've wiggle wired the ends, and then Joe fashioned some end walls out of 2x4s with a door for the winter time so we can keep them more closed up. And then those just come off in the spring and summer. So.
And yeah, it's telling when wind will destroy, tunnels, how windy you have it out there. Have you done any, let's say like netting, wind netting or wind fencing?
I haven't. So our property is actually bordered. We have like pine trees that border the entire acreage. And then we have some, basically the property just to our west, which is where a lot of the predominant winds come from, is fully wooded. But it's a significant distance away. So we're still trying to figure that out. If we could do some more of that. It's just trying to figure that out with our layout, how that would work.
Let's talk about family. I know that's incredibly important for you. Yeah. Talk to us about how you've intentionally set the farm up to make sure A, you include them, but B, you can spend time with them.
Yeah. So I have teenagers, like I mentioned, so they don't necessarily care about spending a lot of time with me right now. But no, we did. This was moving out here was for them. It was for us to be able to have a quote simpler life and help them to see the benefits of being out here. And for the most part, they appreciate that. Like I mentioned with having the employees, that was, I really think something that I had underestimated was how much more family time that was going to give us. I remember hearing Ray talk about how he was done by 5 every day and thinking there's just no way, I can't even imagine. And now I do it. I mean, number one, I'm exhausted at 5 o'clock because I'm still in that process. They're still new enough that I still have to show them and, a lot of things, be there and kind of help. But so I'm probably working just as hard as I was, but it's just not as strenuous. But yeah, the kids come out and they hang out with the team as well. And they all joke around. So they're very much a part of that. Like I said, they do help us with the markets. They're starting to see the benefits of, and I think it's nice for them to see like how appreciated we are. I think that's something that's been really eye-opening for them, is for them to hear the community's response to what we're doing versus just me telling them that this is really important for us to be doing. Because there was a lot of long nights at the last year or two. We spend the evenings together. We have dinner together pretty much every night and, sit down and watch a TV show together frequently as well. So.
Any top-rated farming TV shows that you've lately been?
I don't know if I want to admit this. Space Force is the new one that we're all watching together, which is pretty good.
Yes. Season one was too short.
It was too short, right? Yes. So that, and then, we like the Young Sheldon, Big Bang Theory. We watch Schitt's Creek together. That's one I probably, but my kids are older and it's fun to be able to start seeing their personalities and being able to have this time. My oldest son is off the farm now. He's moved away. He's the Navy's problem now. And I like to say, but it's fun to be able to to see that. But I also recognize that, like, wow, it goes fast. And I didn't recognize that, I don't think, as much as I should have when they were younger. Now it's great that I have the ability to take the time, and they're at that age where we can have fun and joke and harass and use some sarcasm and those kinds of things. And it's fun. So, making some good memories.
That's always important. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Yeah, so we have a website, thelooneyfarm.com. We're also on the Facebook and the Instagram, as I like to say, there as well. On Instagram, it's just the_looney_farm. And on Facebook, it's just the Looney Farm. So we post there regularly. Try to keep everybody up to date about what's going on and share lots of pictures and some fun stuff as well.
Yeah, and Looney is spelled Looney, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, for those of us like me who are hard at, you know, bad at spelling.
Yeah, Looney's a lot easier to spell than my last name. So, you know.
Yes, Klebanowski, right?
Good job. There you go.
All right. I've been practicing that for a while. I've been trying to anyway. Okay. Yeah. Well, Carrie, thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. I know it's a farm busy day out there. So I know you're probably looking out the window. Are they quite getting down what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, not yet. I can't see out this window. So I am. I'm trying, but it's not working.
All right. Well, you have a great rest of your day. And again, thank you so much for sharing your insight with us today.
Thank you, Michael, for what you're doing.
Hey, Thriving Farmers. So next week's episode is going to be with Ruby Reed from Vahalia Organics. And Ruby is a farmer and a beekeeper in Southern Oregon. She grows vegetables. They do prepared pickles and jams, and they also raise honey as well. They sell honey. So it's been a wide-ranging conversation. Ruby joined us last year for our Farmers Market Challenge and then joined our course. And so we talk about what she learned in the course and how that helped her completely up-level her marketing and drastically increase her sales. We talk about some of the stands she's taken on social media and how that has attracted the right customers and the great avatars of the people that she serves. And we talk about her advice for new and beginning farmers as she's just a couple years into her farming journey and what she's learned along the way. So great conversation. You're going to absolutely want to join us. It is a wide-ranging conversation. Talk to you next week. There you have it, another episode in the books. So I'd love if you would hop on over to iTunes and leave us a rating and a review. Those mean everything to us. We love to hear what you're thinking. If you have a podcast guest that you can recommend, please pop on over to the Thriving Farmer Podcast website and leave us a review. That's thrivingfarmerpodcast.com.